seen from satellite imagery, upgrades or expansions of the nuclear facility as well as missile production facilities.
Is North Korea already turning its back on Trump's nuclear summit? It's Thursday, July 5th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Doug Bernard in Washington. Also ahead, Australia's Catholic Church paying for the sins of the past, growing trade war fears in Asia, and Stanley Kubrick's 2001, 50 years on. It's all on today's VOA Asia. Now to developments on the Korean Peninsula. U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo is set to leave for North Korea on Thursday to continue talks on denuclearization. The White House and the State Department announced Pompeo's trip on Monday. His return visit to North Korea follows the historic June 12th summit between U.S. President Donald Trump and North Korean leader Kim Jong-un. VOA's Zlatica Hoek has this preview.
After the historic U.S.-North Korea summit, President Trump said he believes Kim Jong-un is serious about wanting denuclearization, but recent news reports cite U.S. intelligence officials as saying North Korea is misleading the United States and continues to expand its nuclear activities at several facilities.
We're seeing from satellite imagery upgrades or expansions of the nuclear facility as well as missile production facilities. And then the intelligence reporting indicates that North Korea is increasing production of its fissile material, not only at Yongbyon, but other covert facilities.
Bruce Klingner is a Korea expert at the Heritage Foundation in Washington and a former CIA and Defense Intelligence Agency official. The White House on Monday declined to comment on the reports.
We aren't going to confirm or deny any intelligence reports. What I can tell you is that we're continuing to make progress. Ambassador Kim had a meeting just yesterday with members of the North Korean delegation, and Secretary Pompeo, as I just mentioned, will be headed to North Korea later this week, and we're going to continue those conversations.
Some analysts cite 8 failed agreements with North Korea and say its authoritarian leaders will never give up its nuclear stockpile. Klingner says there is hope, even though North Korea may try to cheat this time too.
What the U.S. needs to do is learn from the mistakes of the past and not allow a yet another flawed agreement, which is very short, very vague, which does not have the details such as what we had in arms control treaties with the Soviet Union.
White House National Security Advisor John Bolton said in a television interview Sunday that the administration has a plan of action that could dismantle North Korea's nuclear arsenal in a year if Pyongyang cooperates. He said the plan would require full disclosure of all of North Korea's chemical, biological, and nuclear programs and ballistic missile sites. Zlatica Hoek, VOA News, Washington.
And you can read more on our top stories by following us on Facebook/VOA Asia. These are the top Asia stories currently trending on voanews.com. Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe has given up on a plan to visit Iran this summer. India is asking Facebook to prevent the spread of false texts on its WhatsApp application. Hong Kong's High Court has ruled that the same-sex partner of a British expatriate should be granted a spousal visa. And a new polio immunization campaign went into action in Afghanistan amid concerns that insurgents could deprive hundreds of thousands of children of the vaccine. Expanded coverage of these stories and more at voanews.com. VOA in Asia continues. Victims of child sexual abuse are calling for the Vatican to dismiss an Australian archbishop who's been sentenced to a maximum of 12 months detention for concealing child sexual abuse in the 1970s. Philip Wilson, the Archbishop of Adelaide, is the most senior Catholic official in the world to be convicted of the offense. With more now from Sydney, here's Phil Mercer.
Archbishop Wilson is unlikely to go to jail, but could spend up to a year in home detention, most likely with a relative, where his movements would be monitored. The sentence was handed down by a magistrate in the city of Newcastle, north of Sydney, who said the Catholic cleric had shown no remorse for covering up the crimes of a paedophile priest who'd abused altar boys in the Hunter Valley region of New South Wales in the 1970s. Wilson was told he'd ignored the plight of the children who came to him for help to protect the reputation of the church. Following his conviction in May, the 67-year-old cleric stepped aside from his role as Archbishop of Adelaide, the South Australian state capital. Victims of abuse now say that if he doesn't resign, he should be sacked by Pope Francis. There's also dismay at the sentence given to Wilson. Peter Gogarty, who was abused as a child by a priest, believes a harsher penalty was justified.
I'm disappointed because I really think that this offence deserves a full custodial sentence. And I think for someone like me who struggles most days to stay positive, it's just distressing that, you know, potentially 6 months living in his sister's home does not seem like a particularly onerous punishment.
Archbishop Wilson had denied the allegations, insisting that he couldn't remember being told about the abuse. His lawyers had tried to have the case dismissed because of the defendant's diagnosis with Alzheimer's disease. Catholic authorities in Australia have said that the sentence handed down by the court should give some sense of peace and healing to the victims of the paedophile priest Wilson protected. Catholic organisations came in for particular criticism from a royal commission that spent 5 years investigating the sexual and physical abuse of children in Australian institutions. Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull said a national tragedy had been exposed. Turnbull will make a national apology to victims in October. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
The United Nations High Commissioner on Human Rights is reporting that thousands of Rohingya refugees continue to flee violence and persecution in Myanmar. As Lisa Schlein reports for VOA, the High Commissioner presented a grim assessment of the precarious situation facing Rohingya in Rakhine State.
Human Rights Chief Zaid Rad Al Hussein accuses the authorities in Myanmar of trying to whitewash its devastating treatment of the Rohingya people. In recent months, he says Myanmar has challenged allegations its security forces have engaged in an ethnic cleansing campaign that has sent more than 700,000 Rohingya refugees fleeing to Bangladesh. He says the Myanmar authorities also are trying to convince the world it is willing to allow the refugees to return to their homes and it is safe for them to do so. Zaid disputes these assertions. He says he has evidence that the few people who have returned to Rakhine of their own accord have been imprisoned and ill-treated. Since the start of this year, he says more than 11,400 Rohingya have arrived in Bangladesh from Myanmar and more continue to flee. He says dozens of others have departed by boat from Malaysia and Indonesia and some reportedly have died en route.
All the newly arrived refugees who have been interviewed by OHCHR described continuing violence, persecution, and human rights violations include killings and the burning of Rohingya homes. No amount of rhetoric can whitewash these facts. People are still fleeing persecution in Rakhine and are even willing to risk dying at sea to escape.
Zaid urges the Security Council to refer Myanmar to the International Criminal Court to investigate all allegations of crimes against humanity and genocide perpetrated against the Rohingya. Director General of the Ministry of Foreign Affairs of Myanmar, Kwa Motun, tore into Zaid's statement, calling it flawed, full of incomplete and misleading information. He blamed the deteriorating security situation in northern Rakhine on attacks against the government by ARSA, the Arakan Rohingya Salvation Army, whom he calls a terrorist group. He says his government is setting up a commission of inquiry to look into allegations of abuse against the Rohingya. High Commissioner Zaid says Myanmar indulges in what he calls a pattern of investigative whitewash. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
It was 50 years ago that the sci-fi epic 2001 A Space Odyssey by filmmaker Stanley Kubrick opened in theaters across America to mixed reviews. The almost three-hour-long film was too cerebral and slow-moving to be appreciated by the general audience. But today, half a century later, the movie is one of the American Film Institute's top 100 films of all time. VOA's Penelope Pulu has this look back.
The music of Johann Strauss's Blue Danube Waltz is in step with Kubrick's crisp, slow-moving images of space, an otherworldly spectacle watched on huge Cinerama curved screens in 1968. Many describe the visual effects of the film as hypnotic, enhancing the message of 2001, A Space Odyssey, that humanity's intellectual advancement was aided by alien intelligence. Kubrick steered clear of images of stereotypical aliens. Instead, the alien presence appears suddenly through a looming black monolith, transmitting signals that teach ape-like anthropoids how to use tools for hunting and survival. Millions of years later, in Kubrick's imagined high-tech world of 2001, the aliens make contact again through the monolith. This time, the slick rectangle prods humans towards an exploration voyage to Jupiter.
And they get to Jupiter, and then that's where the transformation takes place.
Douglas Trumbull was the photographic effects supervisor on the 2001 set. During the film's four-year production, he helped Kubrick come up with new filming techniques showing Dave Bowman, the only surviving astronaut on spacecraft Discovery 1, making contact with aliens through a stargate, and eventually evolving into a non-corporeal entity.
And it was this idea that you could take photography and open the camera shutter for a long period of time, several seconds, and move lights and blink them on and off in patterns and create three-dimensional light streams for the Stargate.
Trumbull compares Kubrick's technical innovation of using rotating weightless sets and filming in 360 degrees to today's all-immersive virtual reality filmmaking.
A lot of people want to have their virtual reality thing. They want to go into another dimension. They want to have some experience that transcends their everyday reality. That's what I think virtual reality promises.
Equally significant to the film's technology is the plot involving the antagonistic relationship between man and artificial intelligence. Hal, the ship's malfunctioning central computer, and Bowman clash over the ship's control.
Open the pod bay doors, Hal.
I'm sorry, Dave. I'm afraid I can't do that.
Bowman wins and makes contact with the aliens. The last scene takes place in a hotel room the aliens recreate from his memory. There, on the bed, Bowman, a very old man, is dying before he gets transformed into a transparent star child. To celebrate the film's 50th anniversary, artist Simon Birch recreated that hotel room scene at the Air and Space Museum in Washington, D.C. Exhibit curator Martin Collins explains the lasting power of the film.
The movie 2001, did not seek to pose specific answers to its largest questions, right? What would be the fruits of space exploration? What would be the potential meaning of contact with extraterrestrials? What would be the possible transformations that might occur to humanity as it undertakes exploration outside of the planet? So all of these larger questions are kind of implied here in this room. And I think we hope that visitors will, kind of step back a little bit, think about why this room is here, and think about that sort of larger set of questions that Kubrick and Clark posed in 2001.
Penelope Pulu, VOA News, Washington.
And you've been listening to VOA Asia. You can get our program on iTunes and SoundCloud, so you can take our podcast with you. And you can also find us at voanews.com. Thanks so much for joining us. I'm Doug Bernard in Washington. Enjoy the day.